Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
It's BudPod 74. Is 74 anything to you, Phil?
Ding, ding, ding. Round 74 in the boxing match between the world and Phil and Pierre. Who will win this one? Will we finally get that knockout we've been waiting for?
Now it's 74-0 to the world.
74. Heavenly score, 74.
A heavenly score, nice.
How have you been, Pierre? I did a gig yesterday, a real life performance in front of people.
Yes. How did it feel?
It felt great. At first, you know, when you first get on stage, everyone's wearing their masks. Everyone looks like Sub-Zero from Mortal Kombat. It's a bit, it's a little unnerving, but. But what's funny, actually, is because I haven't been on stage for so long, I've sort of forgotten what to compare it to. So it felt like an almost completely new experience, and it was fine.
Interesting.
And everyone had a good time, I think. And I was really grateful that people put it on and put it together and came. It was great. It was good fun.
Yeah, well, this I also did my first real life gig in a long time on Saturday, and I think we both did them at the Battersea Arts Centre, did we not?
Yeah. Shout out to the BAC.
So, for anyone listening who lives in London, the Battersea Arts Centre is doing socially distanced shows in its courtyard. Yeah. Did you have what I had, which is when I did my first gig after a long time? Before the gig, I sort of thought, because comedy is a drug. Stand-up comedy is an addictive drug. Which is why it drives so many people insane and makes them sacrifice like their whole lives on its behalf.
Remortgage their houses, yeah.
Exactly, like some sort of long-term drug addiction thing. And so there was a part of me thinking, like, maybe I'm free. I've gone cold turkey for 140 days, you know? Maybe I can just have this pint. I'm free. And maybe I'll be on stage. And while I'm talking, maybe it'll go really badly because now I can't do it anymore. Or maybe it'll go well, but I'll still have this voice in my head saying, no, Pierre, you become a doctor. Save the children. A higher calling. And then I could feel in my soul while I was on stage, this part of my life is over. And nope, still a drug addict.
Well, in the time of global pandemic, I think actually, Pierre, we need comedians more than we need doctors.
Laughter is the best medicine.
It is the best medicine. And where else are you going to get your truth from, if not from the noble jester whispering difficult truths into the king's ear? That's what we're for.
Oh, man. If someone had only roasted that bat in Wuhan.
Well, they did. That was a problem.
You should have cooked it all the way through, damn it. Hey, nice wings. Are you a goth bird? That kind of thing. But yes. So are you still a drug addict as well, then? You felt the thrill.
I really did, and I'm actually annoyed I don't have a gig again tonight, because I just want to get back up there. Come on, let me at him. I'm like a scrawny guy in an old cartoon just putting up his dukes. Let me at him.
Scrappy-Doo,
yeah. So flicking my nose and waving my fists in front of me. Let me at him. Scrappy-Doo was an annoying little piece of shit, wasn't he? Every time Scooby-Doo came on and there was a Scrappy-Doo episode, I'd go, oh, fuck off. Stop trying to relate to me, Hanna-Barbera.
Yeah, and also, like, it's quite funny because it's such a pandering character in so many ways, and I cannot think of a single child or adult who I have talked to about Scrappy-Doo that liked him.
Pandering is the word. I think now you say that, I realize it was my first conscious experience of being pandered to.
Yeah, and, you know, and what I mean? By a big faceless corporation at a distance, the grossest kind.
And I remember watching Scrappy-Doo and thinking, is this what Hanna-Barbera think of me? This is insulting. This is child face. It is, isn't it? It's child face. That's what Scrappy-Doo is.
Yeah, it's child face. But also, like, I didn't understand...
child face.
I didn't understand why his
shameful follows a shameful tradition of child face that would not be acceptable anymore.
Yes. Well, in the Netherlands.
Yeah. They have a big little Pete. They call him, and he's a grown man.
Kleine Peter.
Full grown man with a child mask on. It's really offensive.
Yeah, the older the man, the better, they think. Outrageous.
Scrappy-Doo was my first experience of pandering. Interesting.
But I never understood. So his whole thing is he's scrappy and he wants to fight the ghosts, right?
Yeah.
But they never let him. He's always going like, oh, I'll find the vampire. And they go, no. And they have to like run back and quickly grab him by the scruff of the neck and then rescue him. So he's still running away like they are.
Right. Yeah. So in effect, what is he adding to the equation? Yeah. What's he bringing to the table?
And also, the reason they did that is because if in one episode they'd gone, it's a spooky Dracula, and they'd run away, and Scrappy-Doo had gone, meh, and just punched Dracula in the balls, and Dracula, who's actually an old caretaker, had gone, oh, Jesus, and just doubled over and, like, vomited. They would have all gone, it's the cleaner. Yeah.
So that's it. Okay. That is the great underlying tragedy of the Scooby-Doo franchise, is that Scrappy-Doo had it right the whole time. And if only they'd let him fight these septuagenarians in bedsheets, they'd have solved every case in a matter of minutes, seconds.
Well, that's the question, isn't it? Is what if you're dressed as a ghoul or a goblin because you're trying to scare people away from a theme park? I mean, what do they do when they catch the Shaggy? Are they going to just stab him to death with a knife? They're chasing them. They've got to have a thought of, what if I catch them?
Yeah, that's a good point. Maybe they just sort of grab them and just slowly push them out of the theme park. There you go.
Don't come back. Yeah, maybe that would be it.
Also, how are Scooby and Shaggy still afraid of ghosts, having more proof than anyone else that ghosts do not exist?
They're just high. It's got to be why. They're just so high that they forget that the ghosts aren't real.
And yeah, you know what's tragic is people always laugh at Scooby-Doo for being dumb and silly, but he's arguably the smartest dog that's ever lived. He can speak a bit of English.
And he understands all English.
Not just sit and roll over and fetch. He understands the concept of existential threat, of corruption,
of waiting for future reward. That's a concept some humans don't understand, whereas they can say to him, we'll give you Scooby snacks if you fucking calm down or whatever, and he understands.
He understands the idea of vested interest.
He's the Einstein of the dog world, and
we spit on him. Or we shit on his memory.
Because he has a speech impediment. That's the only reason.
and a bit of a snack problem.
If you encountered a dog a half as smart as Scooby-Doo in real life, it would cause a global incident.
He'd be banned from Crufts because
people assumed
he was drugging because he's such, but he's you'd such have a smart to, like, dog.
It would genuinely have to be addressed by, like, the Pope. People would say the current doctrine of the Catholic Church and most religions worldwide is that animals do not have souls, but we can chat to this fucking dog. This changes everything. They're capable of higher thought. What happened to this dog that it's like this now?
He has his own brand of snacks. So he's capable of, like, small business ownership.
Yeah.
He has a small business.
On various occasions, he's capable of disguising himself as a human and driving. How many dogs are there? Like this. It would change human morality. You'd be able to ask a dog, like, if it has memories and what form do they take.
He'd get a Nobel Prize.
Can he read?
I swear you could, like, read signs, couldn't he, that say sort of do not enter or, like,
yeah,
ghosts afoot or something.
And yeah, the sort of signs you'd get. In school. Yeah, parking between 4 and 10.
The smartest dog that ever lived, and we spit on his grave.
Yeah, it would change everything. It would change all sort of human society if we could figure that out. Yeah, it would be interesting, like, if you could get animals able to talk, if you could teach them to speak, some of them, it would be interesting if some types of animal turned out to just be horrible.
Most animals would be horrible.
But I mean, like, at least with, you know, dogs or cats or some of the things that they say would be like, oh, I love being on your lap or whatever, like nice things.
Mm-hmm.
But then, like, what if it's like every fox just thinks, like, it's not just like animal thoughts, it's like malice. I can't wait to tear its head off, like mad, horrible things.
Yeah, like it takes pleasure. It's not just for survival that it kills things. It takes pleasure from it. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, because I mean, if a fox gets into a hen house, it kills all the chickens and only eats one. They're horrible. They're
right,
mad.
Yeah. Gross. No thanks.
Yeah, that's it. You got a shark to talk and it had the nicest thoughts of all, you'd feel horrible. You finally got sharks to speak and they were just going, dopey, dopey, dope. Just really nice idiots.
Yeah, they're all really good singers. Yeah.
Sharks thinking crooning.
Somewhere beyond the sea, somewhere... don't harpoon me! No! She's there watching for me. Da, da, da. Ah, what is this net here? Help!
Yeah. Even when their eyes roll back and they're shredding a seal or whatever, they're still just doobie bop boop. Just still really calm. It makes no difference to them.
Yeah, them sort of creeping up on a surfer. Just.
King of the road.
Oh, the good life. All of fun. Seems to.
Yeah. Crooning sharks.
Crooning sharks. Lounge sharks.
Today is an auspicious day, Phil, because today would have been the start of the Edinburgh Fring.
Yes, the Edinburgh Gus Fring would have started today.
Yeah.
I keep forgetting that it would have been today, because I don't know. I see the Edinburgh Fringe as a sort of a professional requirement and engagement, and so like I don't have the kind of emotional attachment that a lot of people have for it. I think it and I have a symbiotic relationship. You know, I'm merely an egret that feeds off the lice and ticks on its buffalo back. You know what I mean? And I don't really miss the buffalo. I don't think I mean egret. I think it's a smaller bird that does that. But I keep forgetting that it's supposed to be on until I see someone post, oh, today would have been the day that I would have had an existential crisis on a train on the way up to Scotland. And I don't have, you know, I don't really have... I'm not a nostalgic person anyway, Pierre. You know this.
I do.
I think the past is the past and I don't really care about it because it's... I've got all I can out of it.
It's, I sort of miss it, but then I think it must be different for you because you've had a couple of years off, right? Two?
No. I mean, I was there last year.
I mean, from the Fringe?
Oh! Gosh, yeah, maybe it is two. Yeah. Yeah.
I think you took a break from it twice at various points, whereas this would have been my 11th Fringe in a row.
Wow, really?
Yeah, I've never had a break. Not since first year of university.
Gosh, darn it. So this is the first time in 11 years you've been outside of Scotland in August?
Yeah, I think mathematically, first time in 10 years, but 11 fringes, yeah.
Huh.
So yeah, for a decade I have been living in Scotland in Edinburgh for 1 month of every year, and now it's gone. And I mean, even then I'm not as nostalgic as some people we know, because at the end of the day it was like an enormous month-long harrowing casino.
That was also a sort of comedy summer camp where you got to hang out with your friends under the most fraught conditions imaginable.
Yes, there was something of the boot camp about it, definitely. Yeah. And also, because comedians are inherently always swirling around the country, and often when you do a gig especially at the level that you and I are at, you aren't not always true, but you're often the only person from like your year, as it were, on the bill.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So it's for a lot of my friends, it's quite rare for us to be on the same bill. And so for a month, if you get to hang out in a bar that's open to performers only and it's open till 5 a.m., then that's the ultimate hanging out, catch up, cool guy, fun time.
That's right.
Yeah. But yeah, today would have been the start. Were you going to do this year?
No, I wasn't.
Well, there you go.
I was pretty lucky, really. You picked the right year. Before the pandemic, I'd already planned not to do any festivals this year, really. And so it's worked out in my favor in that sense. I've become very callous, by the way, over the last few weeks. I was callous already, and now I'm even more callous. So just heads up, folks. the new Phil Wang is dreadfully callous, and I'm not going to shy away from showing that on stage. I wasn't going to do it this year, but you know, the 2 years ago when I didn't do it, I came up for 2 days and I just watched as a pure punter, and I had the best time in the world. I loved it so much. So I think from a punter's point of view, I think it's a terrible shame, and it's a lot of fun just to go on. And it is an extraordinary phenomenon. But from an industry standpoint, from a comedy standpoint, I think it might end up being a good thing. I think the industry needs to take a break from the Edinburgh Festival for a year, gain some perspective. I think we lose our minds going up every year. I think the industry goes a bit insane, and it's nice to. It's always good to break patterns. That's the thing. When something becomes a bit tired, it's always good to break patterns. And I think the festival might come out better. I think it might be less bloated, and I think Like, there's a bit of a... I mean, now I've really got my callous numbers hat on. I think the people of Edinburgh, a lot of people have been in Edinburgh really supportive of the Fringe and love it, but a lot of I find it a nuisance and a disruption and distraction. And I think the economic hit of not having the Edinburgh Fringe will renew a sense of appreciation for it among people there. But whether, although, you know, that economic hit will probably be buried under the economic hit of the pandemic anyway, so people might not notice it.
Well, Edinburgh University is certainly going to be in trouble because they make a huge proportion of their budget from the Fringe, and they've lost the international 35k a year or whatever it is students.
Yeah, I mean, it's going to be difficult for the Edinburgh University, certainly.
But hopefully, as you say, because, I mean, as much as it's like a delightful thing, like the city does put its huckster, shyster hat on and does punch as much money as it can out of your guts.
It really does.
Whether you're a punter or an act. And so maybe when it comes back, although the ultimate sort of joke of it would be if it came back and it was like twice as money grubbing as before.
Well,
to
that's
make
the thing.
Up for this year.
That's what's going to happen. That's what's going to happen, is that it's just going to be even more expensive because they've got so many losses to make up.
God, tatties and neeps for $20 a pound. No way.
£10 for tatties, £10 for neeps.
Oh, I'm sorry. Don't you want neeps?
Oh, just the tatties today, then. All right.
Well, it's a real shame. I've got a van full of neeps right here. I'm just going to have to drive it away. It's the kind of thing they'll say. They'll put the thumbscrews on us neeps-wise, Phil.
You know what I feel about the Edinburgh Fringe not being on this year? It's the same way I feel about, like, universities and schools having to close is... just how lucky I am to be past the point in my life where I really needed those things. We're so lucky. I feel so sorry for kids who are doing their exams and it's about to start university because, you know, this is so disruptive to such a formative few years. And I feel that, and the same thing is going to happen to new comedians this year who needed the Edinburgh Fringe to get a foothold on the industry's ladder. But then I get callous and I go, well, good. Because, as I've said to you, Pierre, there's nothing Asian people are better at than pulling the ladder up. And, and the pandemic has really pulled the ladder up for me and people of my generation for a year at least.
The one bunch of students I don't feel sorry for is first year uni students.
Yeah.
Because... that's a lifelong excuse that they've got, and that's very valuable.
An excuse to say what?
Because they'll be like, no matter what goes wrong, they can be like, well, of course, the pandemic.
Right, so like later when they're on their fifth divorce, and they're like, well, you know, exactly. I missed Freshers Week, so...
Well, they can just be like, well... Because they don't miss the actual, like more vital, necessary teaching of, say, the second year or third year, just especially the third year where it's the actual exams you're missing. But then they get to say, well, you know, it all started with such a disruption. I could never quite catch up enough to get the top result, you know.
Your Honor.
Otherwise, I definitely would have.
Yeah.
That's totally what I would do. I'd be like, oh, the pandemic, I'd blame it for everything. And I will be. I will be blaming it for everything from now on. That will be my strategy. Yes, I'm going to be... That's the one group where I think... that's first year, so, you know, not too crucial. I mean, I guess it's a shame if they're, you know, actual, you know, doctors or whatever. But even then, still first year. They've got so many years of learning to... you'll figure it out. You'll figure it out. But like a first-year art student, hey, fill your boots. Enjoy, man. Enjoy.
Yeah, you'll have about as much contact time as you would have anyway.
Yes, exactly. Yeah, 3 hours a month, read these 14 books. You won't. You know.
Yeah, just pop out an essay. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Maybe, without being able to go and get battered all the time and with the resentment of having to wake up early to go to the lectures, you'll actually be able to do all the reading on the reading list.
Imagine this. This year turns out the most... advanced year of academics in centuries because they can't get wasted.
And also, they just finally got left alone. So it was just like a filter for like everyone who's naturally like learning on their own, like coming up with their own thoughts, their own ideas, as opposed to being told what to think. And so it'll be like 15% unleashed geniuses, 85% you have to repeat the year.
Right. Interesting.
So like for that small group of people who do better with fewer, you know, top-down inputs, they're going to flourish. And everyone else is going to be like, but what do we believe about this?
Which is good, because then the universities are preparing the next generation of work-from-homers. Which is what
that's true.
The economy is going to be now for the rest of the century. God.
I will say, I was speaking to friend of the podcast and wonderful comedian Daniel Muggleton, Australian comedian.
Oh, yeah. Danny Muggs.
Old Danny Muggs, and he's out in Australia enjoying their various versions of the pandemic.
Mm-hmm. Shout out to people in Melbourne. Stay strong.
Hey, Melbourne. We should have met this year, but we did not. Hopefully we'll meet next year at the Melbourne Festival.
But you know, they're now under like super strict lockdown until the middle of September. Like
because
curfews.
It all came back, didn't it?
Ugh, man. Yeah.
That's going to be us soon. Woo! Second wave, everyone. Strap in.
I don't think so. This is going to come back to bite me, but I'm going on record here. I don't, like, no matter how bad it gets, I don't think the Tory party can survive another full national lockdown. It'll be like loads of little ones, I think. Or like localized.
I don't know. It depends. If the R rate goes really high and people start dying again, what are they going to do? Finally just come out and say, well, you just go out and eat some fucking Thai food. Just go out, like we told you, eat some Thai food and shut up about the R number.
I think they're probably just hoping that AstraZeneca are right and that they're going to have all the vaccines ready in October.
Yeah, and just in time for a Halloween vaccine.
Ah, yes.
And it'll turn us all into zombies in time for Halloween, like in Resident Evil.
Ah, fun. That'd be great.
Yeah.
Because I never have a costume.
Yes. Yeah. Or everyone is going to Halloween this year as pandemic victim, whether they like it or not.
I'm going to go to Halloween parties dressed as the coronavirus, but still like going around going, guess who I am? Go on, guess who I am? And I'm getting really annoyed when anyone else is dressed as anything regarding coronavirus. Like, what?
Yeah. Aww.
What would be some good Halloween costume ideas for this year?
Going as the bat?
The bat. Yeah, but bats are sort of a mainstay of Halloween anyway, aren't they?
Yeah, but you go as the coronavirus bat by dressing as a bat and then having like a big thermometer in your mouth with a high temperature on it, kind of thing.
Yeah, and an ice pack on your head. That'd be funny.
Yeah. The way that you can tell someone is sick in a cartoon.
Yeah.
Coronavirus bat. The coronavirus itself. I either like bouncy like space hopper, you know, with all things sticking out, coronavirus, or put a crown on your head and cover yourself in Corona bottles of beer.
Yep.
And then the bits that stick out are actually beers, and then you're actually like a kind of walking beer dispenser. That's pretty good.
Fun. That is advanced. Yeah. That's real good.
Hey, I got Halloween in my blood, boy.
Do you? Why? Oh, no. Is that one of the coronavirus symptoms?
Yeah. Spooky pumpkins in your blood.
Oh, no. For up to a year.
I think I grew up thinking even more about Halloween than a normal little weirdo nerd, because the Isle of Man, of course, has its own unique Halloween tradition. Hoptune is what we call it on the Isle of Man.
Ah, like the Scottish Hogmanay. Hoptune.
Yes, Hogmanay. Similar, but the Isle of Man's Hoptune is like...
Hogmanay is a new year.
Yeah.
But why does it sound so similar to Does nay, is nay some old word for something?
Well, nay in Manx Gaelic in Hopchine is spelt N-double-A.
Uh-huh.
So it's Gaelic, whereas I think Hogmanay's roots are Germanic, Lowland Scots, I'm not sure.
So it's complete coincidence that they sound similar?
I think so.
Ah, great.
I think so.
Well, just, that's just great. I look like that. a bleeping Hopchine, idiot now. A bleeping
carving
idiot.
Carving moots or turnips into horrible faces and singing about Ginny the Witch.
Second appearance for turnips already?
Yep.
Although, what are neeps? It is turnips, isn't it?
Yes, neeps. Neeps and tatties. Yes, it is turnips.
It's not parsnips or nipples. It's turnips.
No.
It's not just nips. It's not just ground nips.
Cover your nips with these neeps. Neeps. That's the sort of accent of Ren from Ren and Stimpy. Nipples. Actually, there's a whole episode of that where they go on and on about rubber nipples that I'm still astonished looking back. Look it up on YouTube, listeners, and be amazed that it was a children's show. Really
astonishing. I was always shocked Ren and Stimpy wasn't in a children's channel. I'd assumed there would have been a mistake.
I've been inquiry. Like, the guy in charge of Nickelodeon or whatever is like, you put what on? Those tapes never should have seen the light of day. They should have stayed in my safe.
I guess it's kind of like a precursor to Adult Swim, right? Those sort of cartoons that's really, you know, straddled the line between adult and children.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, the 90s was when all that sort of stuff kicked off. I mean, I think Adult Swim even started late 90s, early 2000s, maybe even earlier. But also just MTV. MTV was one of the first channels that was like, we're going to start making cartoons for grown-ups.
Interesting.
Mike Judge, who did, obviously, King of the Hill, Office Space, mm-hmm. Silicon Valley, I think, is his as well.
Okay.
Idiocracy. He is the Beavis and Butthead guy. He did Beavis and Butthead.
Uh-huh, and that was an MTV, wasn't it? Yeah, I getcha.
Mm.
If you thought the only way to get a more defined jawline with natural-looking results was through surgery, think again. Juvederm Volux XC is a non-surgical injectable gel filler that improves moderate to severe loss of jawline definition and can help you achieve natural-looking results with little downtime. Even better, this improved definition lasts up to 1 year with optimal treatment. No maintenance required. Improve jawline definition for a smooth, sculpted look with Juvederm Volux XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
Oh, speaking of nostalgia, I saw a Nazi on the tube.
Yeah. Yes. Yes, you did. My Christ.
I had my first faced, like, confirmed Nazi spotting on the tube. Like, I knew that going on public transport right now was hazardous, but I had no idea just how hazardous. There was a he had blonde hair, shaved on the sides like he was in a Viking film. Because the Vikings all apparently had really good, like, number one razors.
Yes, exactly. Electric razors. They had fades. They had sick fades.
But yeah, and Vikings always have this perfect perfectly flat shaved size of a head. And he had this swastika just tattooed on, just behind his right ear. But he was also wearing a face mask, so I guess he wasn't all bad.
It's interesting, isn't it? Because often being an actual Nazi, is tied with believing in a lot of conspiracy theories, but clearly he doesn't believe the mask conspiracy theories.
Well, he's got to weigh his love for conspiracy theories with his love for authoritarianism.
Yeah. And so, his idea that a diverse city like London is full of danger and disease.
Interesting, yeah. But then on the other side, on the other hand, if he is a member of the Übermensch master race, surely they should be impervious to a little respiratory disease.
Well, that's one of the signs of fascism that Umberto Eco talked about, which is that if you are a fascist, you have to present your enemy as unbelievably dangerously powerful and also incredibly weak and easy to defeat at the same time.
Mm.
So you have to be like, the enemy is so dangerous that we all need to unite under one dictator, but also we'll defeat them immediately.
Right, yes, interesting.
So you always have to have an enemy that is simultaneously, essentially Thanos and Scrappy-Doo. Those are the two versions of your enemy.
But I was just amazed that this guy was just sort of willing to... And he'd shaved the side of his head almost to make it look... Well, to reveal the tattoo more. But then also to have had it tattooed in a slightly concealed place behind the ear. Like, he couldn't decide how much he wanted people to know he was a Nazi.
It's a bit flirty, isn't it?
Yeah, very flirty, very coy.
Maybe I am.
But otherwise, he's just like a dude. He's just like a guy just sort of waiting on the tube for his next, for his stop to come. Like,
how big was the swastika?
Ooh. A bit bigger than a 50 pence piece.
Really?
Yeah, it's like significant. Like, I was two seats away and I could make it out pretty clearly.
Okay, so maybe like, because you said, I remember you said it was inside a circle, like a lot of swastikas are.
It was like
all good swastikas.
And it was at the Nazi angle, so the swastika itself was angle. It's not like the Buddhist one, which is sort of straight, but the Nazi sort of tilted one. But then it was in a circle, so that the legs of the swastika, as it were sort of curled to fit into the circle, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, sort of aerodynamic looking.
Yeah.
So it was like a sort of 2 inches in diameter, say.
Let me have a measure. Yes, something like that. Maybe, yeah.
Yeah, it's pretty big, man.
A bit less. Maybe 1.5 inches.
That's barely covered by the kind of shadow of your ear.
Yeah. It was quite extraordinary.
I had
a real double take. Like, huh? I couldn't believe it really for a while. I give him the benefit of the doubt for ages. Like, maybe it's just like a Celtic thing, because it's kind of got that sort of Viking Celtic-y kind of curliness that they sometimes have, you know. But maybe that's been imposed by these sort of. Maybe he's like a sort of Scandi Nazi.
Well, the oldest swastikas in Europe, we say swastika, but swastika is the Hindi word. They're not actually called swastikas anywhere other than us, and that's because we colonized India. In German, it's called, a Hakenkreuz.
Okay.
Something
sounds
cross.
Delicious. Yeah.
It does. Ein bisschen Hakenkreuz mit der ice cream, ja?
Nothing like an ice cold Hakenkreuz, just a flagon of Hakenkreuz. 3 Hakenkreuz, please. The lads are thirsty.
A pint of refreshing. Yes, exactly.
Hakenkreuz has been brewed in this city for centuries.
Only the best wheat.
Only the whitest wheat. It's all white beer. Obviously.
Yeah.
White or blonde beer, yeah.
White and white beer or blonde beer, those are the two best beers at the Hagenkreuz Brewery. The oldest swastikas are like Bronze Age symbols of the sun that you get on weird carvings and spooky rocks and things, like runes. That's where they got it from.
Right.
I was making fun yesterday of that whole thing where people go, and the swastika in India and in Buddhism is a symbol of peace, and that is why when it is a Nazi one, it is the other way around. And they swapped it to make it, it was bad. As if when Hitler was in prison writing Mein Kampf, he thought, he just found a dictionary of Indian religious symbolism somehow and was flicking through it. And underneath the big swastika, it said symbol of peace. And he went, well, we'll see about that. Ooh, I'll flip it so it's pointing the other way. Because I'm evil. Ooh.
Yeah.
And imagine Hitler having to explain that to like an audience of drunk Nazis in Munich in the 30s. And they go, this will be the symbol. And they all go, what is that? And they go, well, so in India, there is this thing. It is called swastika. And it's like, so it looks like this, but so it's the other way around, right? You're like, just hang on. You're like this.
As obviously, we're all very interested in Hindi history and culture.
So, you know how much we like Buddhism. Well, okay, here is the joke. It is a switcheroo. It is reversed, yeah? Because we like devour and killing, because we're evil. That's right, isn't it? We think of ourselves as evil. Yeah. Very, very, very silly. Not true. It's a weird old German symbol that has been turned into this thing. But then that's the dodgy thing, is that you sometimes get these people going like, I'm not going to let the Nazis win and take the lovely swastika away, so I'm just going to have a full chest tattoo of the swastika. And you're like, right, but do you think these racist things? And they go, oh yeah.
Right.
Like they're always still racist.
But that's pure coincidence. I believe slightly different racist things of my own
volition. Yeah. I believe that it shouldn't involve open warfare. Ah, so I'm nice. I'm a nice one.
Yeah.
You know, get in the bin. Get in the bin. What do you think would have happened if you were, like, so you're on the tube, you're near this fucking actual Nazi, which, in a way, must have been like as shocking as a cold plunge pool, because we've become used in this country to so many people just being called Nazis generally. Like it's a sort of thing you say, isn't it?
Yeah.
But now there's an actual one. Actual one is there. What do you think would have happened if you'd just sort of gone, hey, excuse me, and he'd looked and you'd pointed at like on yourself where it is behind the ear and gone, what the hell, man?
I know. I mean, that's what I was thinking at the time. Like, what would happen if someone... what I pictured was you sat next to me on my right and me nudging you and then going, hey, look at that guy. And then me tapping on the back of my ear. And then him catching me doing that. And what would happen then? That's what I was thinking, specifically.
Yeah. Would he
be embarrassed? Would he be like, ugh, like cover his face or just look away or change cars? Or would he be like, yeah, that's right. What are you going to do about it?
Or would he just like stay staring forward or at us, maybe?
Yeah, exactly. And just try and stare us down. I'm not really sure of the Nazi position on East Asian people either, because surely they must have a bit of a soft spot for the Japanese, for helping them out in that.
Yeah, I mean... You'd think so, but I think that they always just sort of go, oh, like they always find a way, you know. That's what they say. Nazis will always find a way to be racist.
Yeah.
It would have been funny if he'd caught you tapping your behind your ear, and then you'd pointed and gone like, "Where can I get me one of those?" Giving a big thumbs up.
If anything, the Nazis should hate the Chinese most of all, because if they really are obsessed with one race holding all the world's money, they're kind of looking in the wrong direction.
Do you think in a way it's kind of like that guy on the tube with his tattoo is the ideal person to get into a physical fight with?
Well, in what way? Hello?
Oh, you cut out there. I just heard you say well.
Oh, sorry. You said he's the ideal person to have a fight with, and then I said, in what way?
Oh, you cut out again.
Yeah, well, unless I'm losing you too. Just wait.
The ideal person to have a fight with, and then you said, in what way? Is that what you said?
Yeah, in what way?
Well, because, okay, first of all, you get into a fight with a Nazi, right? And you don't need to feel bad about hurting the Nazi.
Okay.
If I've ever been in a fight, like when I was young or whatever, then later you think back and you go, oh, I really, like, that was a needless escalation that happened between me and whatever guy in a pub or at school, and we didn't need to have a fight in the schoolyard, and we could have solved it otherwise. Whereas with a Nazi, you can be like, yeah, I wish I'd punched him more. He's a Nazi. And then also, you will never ever be looked down on or probably even get into trouble for doing it.
Right.
You can say for the rest of your life, I saw a Nazi, and
he's unlikely to go to the police and admit to being hurt by a minority, is he? I mean, I'm really... Well,
but also, like, for the rest of your life... You really what, sorry?
I'm really over-egging my fighting abilities here, probably.
No, you're black belt.
Yeah, it was a long time ago.
But for the rest of your life, you could say, I saw a Nazi and I fought a Nazi. I defeated one.
I could say I fought the Nazis. What did you do?
Yeah, we could finally talk on an equal footing to the generation that the boomers pretend to be.
Yeah. It skips a generation, of course, fighting the Nazis.
Yes. It goes fighting, passively indulging, fighting, passively indulging. That's how it works.
Yeah, you fight the Nazis, then you fight high cholesterol mainly, and then you fight the Nazis again. That's how generations go.
Yeah. But yeah, I mean, God, and if you could just, oh God, you could just always say, I saw a Nazi and I fucking beat one up. That would be glorious. I mean, and even if you lost, you could still be like, well, I stood up for what was right when it mattered or whatever.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
God.
It's what getting my ass handed to me represented that really matters.
Where were you? When I was being kicked to pieces by a
when
Nazi.
I was pleading for mercy. When I promised to become a Nazi as well, if only they'd stop. Where were you?
When I was trying to pretend that I was pointing at him as a compliment.
When I was attempting to Sieg Heil, but I couldn't get past their swinging legs. Where were you?
Yeah, I mean, like, I guess the worst feeling in the world would be if you did all that and then you found out later that, like, yeah, he used to be, but he's reformed, but he can't afford the money to get it lasered off, so he's just...
But then he'd grow his hair out, like, that's the thing. He'd grow his...
Yeah, or he'd buy some fucking foundation, right?
Yeah.
You could put some little makeup on there, something like that. But amazing to have seen a Nazi in the wild.
Yeah. It's a real moment.
What do you think that guy was even on his way to do? Some racism.
Skateboarding, by the looks of his outfit, to be honest.
Well,
from his outfit, he was either going skateboarding or to tech a theater show. And seeing as theaters aren't currently open, I guess it would have to be skateboarding.
Watch out for the tech. They're a real Nazi.
Yeah, maybe he was off to police someone's grammar. Maybe that's what he was going to do.
Or he was going to go to Parliament and clap for them, yeah?
Yeah. Yeah. Maybe he's off to join the Conservative Party.
How annoyed must racists be that there are like the Conservative Party is sort of the most successful party in European electoral history, and it's in power in the UK almost all the time.
Isn't it the most successful political party in the history of the world?
It gets harder once you go outside of Europe, I think. But certainly in Europe, they are.
Because the metrics change, I guess. Yeah.
Yeah, the metrics change.
In the West,
the systems
they are.
Change. Oh, yeah. In the West, by far. And it depends on what, if you use percentages or over time. I mean, the ANC in South Africa have never lost an election, nationally speaking. So there's that. But, so it's like 100% as a rate. But if you're like a proper racist, hard rightist, you must be annoyed that like people who are less right-wing than you, i.e. the Conservatives, are always in power. And also they have like Rishi Sunak as the Chancellor, like a minority is the second highest second most powerful office in the land.
Right.
And that's what you're getting from the Conservatives.
And that's the part that people are calling right wing. Yeah, they must be like, that's not right wing at all. Are you kidding? Yeah, to them the Tory party must look like Momentum. You know what I mean?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, that's what I mean. From their point of view, the Tory party must just be like, that gang of fucking hippies.
These commie dirtbags.
Free money for takeaway food. Free money for takeaway food. They must be furious. Well, I mean, we already know they're furious, but like double furious. I never even thought of that before.
They're furious. Yeah.
You sort of feel like there should be... If you see someone with a swastika tattoo, you feel like there should be like a... You know when they tag a rare bird?
Right, yeah. Yeah.
Because you've got to be like, we really need to keep track of this thing.
Yeah.
Like, if you encounter the rare blue-feathered stork or whatever the fuck, please try and tag it so we can figure out where they are breeding and...
That's right. You know. Yeah, you're right, because I felt like, am I supposed to report this to someone? Surely someone's trying to keep track of this sort of thing. Yeah.
You sort of think, there must be is there a button I press somewhere on the wall?
Yeah.
Nazi on the tube? Is that a category?
Yeah, does he count as a suspicious activity? Surely. He counts as a suspicious activity. There are signs on the underground saying if you see anything suspicious, report it. Well, I've got an agent of the Third Reich here. Does that count?
In fact, you know those posters where it's like, if you see something suspicious, report it. And it's always like a spooky man in silhouette slipping into a train control center door.
Mm.
And in the background is the civilian seeing it, and you can their hands on their chin like, maybe I should report that. He wasn't dressed like a member of staff.
Mm.
Whereas if they that works because it's a bit subtle. And it means that people are like, oh, that's the level. That's the base level I should be looking out for. People slipping into doors subtly, like from a Jason Bourne film. Ah. Whereas, if you had a poster where it was someone sat next to someone on the tube, and on the left was a concerned-looking civilian with their hand on their chin going, and the person they were looking at next to them was a full-on neo-Nazi. Just covered in swastikas with a fucking knife and big boots on.
Yeah, exactly. Like,
oh, right. So that's the level of suspicious you mean?
Well, I mean, it's like in the States where that sort of city hall was taken by all these white guys holding literal assault rifles, and the authorities just kind of step back and let them storm city hall.
Well, the authorities didn't just let them storm it; they let them stay there and get care packages of like food and supplies from their families.
Really?
That's fucking unbelievable. Insane. That whole group was... Do you think if you're heavily armed enough, obviously and white enough, but also if you're heavily armed enough, they're just like, well, they could actually give the SWAT team a run for their fucking money here. It's not just one pistol between 50 of them.
To be honest, they look better trained than our police, so we're going to leave them on this one, yeah.
Yeah, our police have to do traffic enforcement sometimes. All these guys do is practice shooting machine guns at other people.
Yeah. Well,
maybe that's it. Maybe they just go, we'll lose, fuck it.
Let me know if you spot any Nazis on public transport, will you?
I'll do my best.
How prevalent it is. Yeah.
Anyone listening, do write in if you've seen anyone else wearing a fucking swastika tattoo, and we'll read your email out in 1,000 years, I guess. But yeah, listeners, let us know if you see any Nazis. That's the advice of episode 74. Nazi Phil Wang, Nazi spotter.
Yeah, I don't do much else. I don't bring them any kind of justice. I just spot them.
It's recon.
Yeah, I'm a scout.
But yes, that was 74. I think we're going to make next week another correspondent special. We might alternate listeners so we can get up to date and get some hot, fresh correspondence every week, like freshly baked bread.
Ooh, delish.
Mm. Okay, have a good week, guys. See you next week.
Bye.
Bye.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.